There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Now wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bobbing along.
This hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Canada Pet Foods. Superior quality in every bag and can.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk, and welcome you to the first hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the Internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got Internet access. Today's show will be a great one to share. And to pick up the stream, the best way to do that, go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again, and that will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. Now, it's a beautiful Sunday morning. Again, the last couple have been pretty overcast, but you have Aunt Martha's permission to just stay right where you are and listen to the show, and you can go out and do your work or play or whatever when we're done. Too important. You've got to be here. Speaking of bright and shiny, across the table from me, as always, Animal World's production engineer, Gary Hill, is here. Good morning, Gary.
Morning.
If you get your black North Face on again.
It's always cold in here.
Well, yeah, that's because the air conditioning's on.
But right.
You get your shorts on, or did you wise up after?
Yeah, I went with shorts this week.
Yeah, because you froze. Your little knees were frozen last week.
Yeah.
So you wore them again.
Yeah.
Okay. Some people never learn.
No, apparently not.
All right. And as always, through the glass in the other studio, Animal World's co-producer and call screener, Sandy Gaston, is here. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
How's your view in there?
Nice. The tree is blowing in the wind, and the sky is blue, and it's warm in my studio.
Oh, are you warm? Yeah, we're like medium in here.
It's comfortable.
Yeah, I think Gary will be okay today.
I think so.
Yeah, it's not like freezing at the moment.
No.
My view is beautiful, except I got a big crane in the way. Wonder what they're doing. A big, huge crane.
Of the metal type?
Of the metal part. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Not of the winged version. That would be very unusual.
That would be.
And we are going into the unusual and strange today because we are not alone. It isn't just the three of us. We have company in the studio, so I'm excited. And all the way from, and I'm not sure which island you come from these days, but
Olympia.
Okay, so you don't even come from an island anymore. Animal communicator Mary Gettin is here. Good morning, Garrett. Mary.
Hi, Martha.
And you brought company with you.
Yes.
So we have such exciting. I always get really excited when there's people in the studio. Anyway, Mary is my guest today, and we will get into the subjects we're going to be talking about, her book, Communicating with Orcas, The Whale's Perspective, and all kinds of wonderful stuff. So it's going to be a great show, and I hope that you will stay with us. Got a few things to take care of before that, and just to let you know, I've got a little bit of follow-up on animals in the news, some good news about animals, and I've got a communication story I can't wait to share with you that's going to get us started here with Mary at 10 o'clock. We're going to run the summer tip, and that is the one that will tell you everything you need to know about keeping your animal friends safe in this heat, and boy, has it been hot, and if I saw the weather report correctly last night, they had for next Saturday, you know, the 7-day forecast and the temperatures, they had 95.
What?
For next Saturday. Yeah, that's
no,
what
don't
I said.
Say that, Martha.
Say that. The weather reporters last night when I watched the news, they said that.
I don't want to hear it.
I'm happy in the 70s.
I'm putting my fingers in my ears going do-do-do-do-do-do.
Right. And even I'll survive up to like 85. gets above that, it's too hot for Martha, and I'm fanning and fainting, and, well, not literally, but melting. So, yeah, that's too hot for me. But we don't live in Seattle anymore, because things are changing. I think we have more tropical weather now, but anyway. All right, so summer tip at 10 o'clock, at 10:50 as usual, current events, and a brand new pet of the week. Nancy McKinney will join us from King County Animal Care and Control. We are opening the Animal World Prize Closet today, and with a very special giveaway, as Mary has been kind enough to provide us with some books. So we will be giving one of Mary's books away each hour. I will let you know when we decide to open the phone lines, because we just don't know when we will open the phone lines.
Yep, we don't. And then I take a random phone line.
Yeah, Sandy takes random phone line, and it's such a fabulous book. I can't believe it took me this long to read it, but because your book's actually been out, for a couple of years?
Yeah, several years.
Yeah, so this isn't a new book, but it's really phenomenal. And at any rate, let's stop fooling around, get into... I don't have any events happening today that I'm aware of, so we just start with a little follow-up, Animals in the News, and... I guess, Sandy, PETA didn't get our message.
No, they didn't.
and they went through, I don't know if you've been familiar with, PETA's protest of the American Veterinary Medical Association was in town this last weekend, and they were throwing the fish as a demonstration.
No, I missed that.
Yeah, and PETA got their panties in a twist. And as Sandy and I have been saying, PETA does some wonderful things, but sometimes we really question, and so we've been... sending the message out, pick your battles, because when you pick things like this that just really don't reach the mainstream, just doesn't get it, and you come across as nutcases. So there's a photo in the PETA protest, colorful but small. Looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Looks like 6 demonstrators outside the convention center and the AVMA meeting, and they kind of painted their body's silver, and I think they were trying to be dead fish on it, but did they really look like dead? I mean, would you know what that was?
I think they looked like dead fish.
Anyway, so they had their little protest. And not that I don't sympathize with, but it's just pick your battles, and they didn't listen to us, Sandy.
Doesn't sound real relevant either.
No,
it's not. It's not relevant at all. Yeah, see that it was, but
Well, they of course think it's disrespectful to throw the dead bodies around, but I mean, we're so disrespectful of the animal world as it is in live bodies. I mean, if we need to clean up our act with the live ones first, and
absolutely,
yeah. All right, second in the follow-up department, and actually this could have gone in good news. Search Seattle Times, Obama pulls back on Bush logging plan, and of course we've reported on this all along, but the good news is that the Obama administration on Thursday scrapped the Bush administration's last-ditch attempt to boost logging in Northwest forests by scaling back protection for the northern spotted owl. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said that a plan to increase logging on federal lands in western Oregon could not stand up to challenges under the Endangered Species Act. He said the Department of the Interior would develop new measures protecting the spotted owl. So that's one of the last things that the Bush administration did to trash stuff that's being turned around. So that's always good news. All right, last in the follow-up department, we all remember the story of the church therapy cat that was stabbed by the drunk resident. And anyway, that fellow was sentenced this week. He said he was very sorry, and he's tried to blame the alcohol and the drinking for what he did. The judge didn't have any part of that, and he got 9 months and community service and a bunch of stuff. And
good.
Yeah, the cat is doing well, is no longer living in the church, you know, doing the therapy work, is now living with the pastor in the home, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cat is okay. So, hopefully the guy learns his lesson. All right. Just general animals in the news. Not a whole lot going on this week. But, now I'm amazed. The annual festival of running with the bulls has been going on. It still amazes me what some people still do. It says the bulls gored four runners, seriously injuring two of them, during a pack running of the bulls on the sixth day of the San Fermín Festival on Sunday. The sixth running of the bulls at the annual festival was held 2 days after a 27-year-old man was gored to death. That's the first fatality since 1995.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I wonder, Mary, have you ever talked to the bulls to see how they feel about it?
I haven't talked to them, but I think that's kind of Darwinism, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
With a little
demise of the idiots on the planet, which are usually
right.
In human suits.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Okay, and then, now this is, maybe you've talked to these. Let's see here. There's a really great photograph. So you can search Seattle Times for this. Giant jellyfish alert. Swarms of giant jellyfish are expected in the coastal waters around Japan this year. A jellyfish typhoon that threatens to inflict massive damage to the fishing industry. One of the biggest varieties of jellyfish in the world, an Echizen jellyfish, I probably massacred that, but it weighs as much as, get this, jellyfish, 440 pounds,
wow.
And have heads reaching
wow.
up to 7 feet in diameter.
Wow.
Now that, my friend, is
that's
a jellyfish,
impressive.
Don't you think?
You bet.
Okay, they damage fishing nets with their heavy weight and harming fish caught in the nets with their toxins. Fishermen also risk getting stung when removing the jellyfish from their nets. They may even force fishermen to stop fishing. Well, if that's going on in Japan, I mean, maybe these jellyfish could come out when they get ready to go whaling.
Yeah.
The dolphin thing. Look at the photograph.
Wow.
Gary, you see the photo of that big, huge jellyfish? Look at it compared to the guy. Yeah, see that?
Wow, that's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you can see, Sandy.
Oh, my goodness.
But that's huge.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really huge. Really huge. So search Seattle Times if you want to pull up that photograph. Okay. Believe it or not, this spirit is so wonderful. I love it. You know, when we have something really wonderful stuff to do on the show, then nothing much happens in the news. You know, some weeks we don't have much to do, and I could go on for hours about what's in the news. But that is, we are done with our regular news, so that leaves us with the best good news about animals. All right. It does. Now, Dan and Spirit provided a little a mention of whales in the news, indirectly, for Mary. And it says, krill fishing ban to help whales. No one fishes for krill off the West Coast. And krill, of course, are those little teeny little fishies or something. What are that?
They're shrimp-like
creatures
that baleen whales eat.
Yeah. It says the federal fisheries managers want to keep it that way, so the tiny shrimp-like creatures remain as plentiful as possible for food for whales, salmon, and seabirds. NOAA Fisheries Service on Monday issued a final rule barring krill fishing inside the 200-mile limit in the Pacific off California, Oregon, and Washington. Krill are taken primarily off Antarctica and to a limited extent off British Columbia and processed into food for salmon farms as well as home aquariums. That's interesting. So the Pacific Fishery Management Council sets ocean fishing limits, and a staffer says they were afraid a commercial krill fishery off the West Coast would threaten food sources for fish, whales, and seabirds at a time they are struggling to survive. Is that true, Mary?
That's true, and that's fantastic to hear they put that through, because not only are they using them in those industries, but they're now making krill oil for people. And, you know, it's not something we need. We have other sources, but the whales, obviously, they can't go out and get other food.
Excellent. So this is a good thing.
That's really good news.
Thought so? Okay. All right. Okay. Now, here is, we've got photographs now. Search Seattle Times, gray wolf pack with pups confirmed. This is out of Spokane. Acting on a tip from loggers, wildlife biologists have confirmed the presence of a wolf pack with pups in northeast Penn Oriel County. At sunrise Friday, Scott Fisher played digital recordings of howling in the remote territory where the wolves had been spotted. An adult wolf howled back, and at least three yappy pups chimed in. So, quote, "It was the best day of work I've ever had," said Fisher, a regional biologist for the Washington Department of Natural Resources. The adult wolf was about 50 feet away back in the brush. He was so close that you could hear his trachea rattling. He just howled and howled and howled. So, you know, we obviously, wolves are moving back into our state naturally on their own. And, of course, we hope that we are wiser in their management than we have been in other parts of the country. So, I don't know, have you chimed in with the wolves?
Have you? Actually, that wolf pack that showed up over by Twisp last year, I've spoken to those guys many times because it turned out they were on a friend of mine's property.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell.
They were actually on the property where we hold the Ferry and Human Relations Congress.
Oh, that's right. Now, you do that once a year, don't
you? Yeah.
And that's tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's a big gathering the last weekend of June, usually about 250 people that all communicate with nature. And so we have lots of teachers, lots of workshops. It's just a great place to connect with people and learn a lot. I think that at the Ferry Congress, you go really deep with your understanding of communication with nature.
Fabulous.
So last year, those wolves showed up on that property.
Wow.
And they were able to get lots of photos of them on motion detective cameras.
Right.
And
I had
the opportunity to talk to them times.
Now, folks, when we get officially into the show today, we're going to go in to Mary's background and how she does what she does. So don't worry, we're going to cover all those bases. But right now, just for the, what did you find out from the wolves?
You know, they were just, they had come down from Canada. They said they had wandered down and they were doing really well. They were enjoying this area. They were finding food. They had like six pups last year.
Yeah.
And one of the pups got left behind, which was really kind of unusual. And I talked to them about it. I didn't quite understand why. It was like that pup had been wandering far. He was really independent, and they just kind of left it. But by the end of the, by this spring, there was only one pup left
out of the
six.
Wow. Wow.
And one had actually, that they know for sure, had been killed by someone up there. And he was caught, fortunately.
Well, no, was that the one that they found the pelt in they were trying to ship it?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, because we reported on that. And that's mentioned in this article.
Yeah.
Because there is a contingent of country folk, the rancher types. Now, not all of them are anti-wolf, but some of them are, and they live in their fear and see it as the worst thing that could happen, and predators that are going to destroy their way of life, and unfortunately for the wolves, they sometimes go take things into their own hands, and this was an unfortunate situation.
It really was.
And there's still, the guy has not been charged yet, so you just got to know that, because they know who did it.
Oh, yeah.
And you just got to know that there's a whole lot of politics going on. And I hope he gets
life.
Well, yeah, I mean, that, if it were up to me. But I'm not in charge. Okay. Let's see. another good news story about animals here. Not the winner yet, because I'm taking front. My story is getting the winning good news about animals. But let's see. It isn't directly related to animals, but a seagoing vacuum cleaner sucks up water pollution. It's an innovative new anti-pollution ship has just hit the high seas off western France. It's called a catamar, and it can collect debris and, more importantly, clean up oil slicks, straining several hundred cubic meters of oil per hour from the water. And more than 40 of these boats have already been sold around the world for cleaning up lakes and stuff. Wow. But so it's like a vacuum cleaner ship, you know, that cruises around. And as soon as I read this article, I mean, it's great that they'll be able to clean up oil slicks better. I mean, it would be even better if we didn't have oil slicks to begin with, but at least I have a better way of cleaning them up. But Sandy, you know, the picture I got when I thought about this vacuum cleaner ship is that it can't be far off before we will have some kind of vacuum ship that can go out into the ocean that they never tell us about, that whirlpool out there in the Pacific of all that's just full of all that plastic crap, that eventually we'll probably be able to suck all that stuff out. And maybe we can really clean up the planet.
Yeah.
How neat would that be?
That would be great.
Yeah. All right. Now, okay, so the best good winner in the good news is my experience this week, and because it's about communicating with our, well, other than human friends, and it was so wonderful, I wanted to share it with you, and I thought how perfect to start us off today and what we're going to talk about. We have done a number of shows in the past, and specifically I think we did two last summer, Sandy, about bees and wasps and the importance of them and understanding and all of that. And our wasp expert is a local fellow named Doug Cheney. And what he does is help people deal with, you know, problem wasps and so forth, and goes and collects them. And they do have to die, but he doesn't spray them. He does it without chemicals. He actually vacuums them up. And then they go to laboratories that make anti-wasp venom treatment. Mm-hmm. So they actually, you know, serve a higher purpose in saving humans that get stung. And so at any rate, and you all know me, I do my very best not to disturb, you know, wildlife or insects or animal friends, and that everybody has a place in the order of things. And so if I have wasps or bees or something on my, you know, in my little city lot, probably, you know, I leave them because they're beneficial if I can. Well, recently I realized that a family of bald-faced hornets had taken up residence right in the front of my house in a rhododendron, like 3-4 feet max away from my front door. And bald-faced hornets, they're the biggest wasps, and they can be some of the meanest in past history and experience. And they're paper wasps, so they build those big paper hives. Well, the entrance to their hive was facing my front door and my front porch, and if it had just been me, you know, I could have lived with them through the season, but I'm still in the city, you know, and the mail people and delivery people. I'm also getting ready to sell my house and move, and all of those shrubs need to be trimmed and so forth. So the bottom line was they couldn't stay. And I of course don't want to just go out and get a can and spray them. And oh, by the way, Sandy, Doug asked me, and I forgot until just this moment. He's having, you know, when he was on the show last summer, we talked about that the less toxic wasp killer spray.
Right.
He said he's getting tons of requests from people for that, and he doesn't know where to get it and what to tell them. And he said, could you ask Sandy, you know, because when I was on the show, she did her little magic on the computer over there, and she found it right away. And can you find out what I can tell people? So, Sandy, could you find out what Doug could tell people about that non-toxic stuff?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Anyway, so I, rather than want, killing these, I called up Doug and said, you know, I have this you know, hornet's nest, and you know, would you come get them so they could, you know, I know they have to die, but at least this way they could serve a higher purpose and go to anti-wasp feminine and stuff. He said, yeah, no problem. He said, but, you know, I'm really busy. You know, I got like 16 calls yesterday and 21 calls today. It's the height of the season, and I can't get there for a while. So it was like 10 days before he could come to deal. And I said, well, you know, I'll deal with them. I'm talking to them. You know, we're getting along pretty good. I found some things to admire about them. And then what little builders they are. I mean, they were practically putting a whole layer on this hive every day. So we got to be pretty good friends in this, the, you know, 10 days that after I discovered them. And but then I went out and went behind the rhododendron from the other side so I could see back under, because I told them it was like just melon size, the hive. But then when I went behind and looked at the back of it, it was like bloated basketball size. So we're like talking huge, huge hive. Okay. All right. So then I'm talking to Doug the day before he's going to come out to get them. And he's explaining to me the process that he says it's pretty low tech, but that, I'll tell you that once he got there, he puts on a bee suit, you know, like a beekeeper suit, just like it looks, you know, the net and the coveralls and the net and all that sort of stuff. And then he has a vacuum cleaner. It's like just a little canister vacuum, but he has a special canister inside that, and then a long hose and then a long silver tube, like, you know, a really old canister right. vacuum with nothing on the end of the silver tube. And then he just kind of scoots in to the hive and sticks, you know, turns on the vacuum and sticks the silver tube right up next to the entrance of the hive and sucks them in as they're coming and going and bumps on the hive to get them into this vacuum cleaner. So he's explaining on the phone how he does that. And he said, you know, I'll do a first round and collect as many as I can, and then I'll deal with those and wait a while, and then I'll do a second round of collecting them. And he said, but you know, you never get them all. And he said, sometimes there might, you know, there could be, you know, some left over. He said, but sometimes there can be, you know, hundreds or more. He said, but. And I was telling him my time frame for cleaning up the yard. And he said, but I'll come and I'll get as many as I can. And then I'll come back the next week and get the rest and all of that. Well, then he said, but you don't have to worry about the ones that are left behind. He said, because once, see, I'll get as many as I can. And he said, then I'll take the nest, the hive, and the queen. He said, but the ones that are left behind, they will just, the only thing they can do is come to the little paper that's left on the shrub, and they will just hang there and die. Well, these wasps are my friends. I said, what do you mean they're just going to hang there and die? And he said, once the hive is gone and the queen is gone, they have nothing to do. And he said, they won't hunt and feed themselves or try to rebuild or anything. They'll just hang on the bush and starve to death, fall off and die.
That's amazing.
Well, so I'm saying, oh, that, I can't have starving, dying wasps on my rhododendron. And, but I said, oh, okay. And so he was coming the next morning. So this is where the story gets good. So I decided, well, this can't be. So I sat that evening. I sat down and to communicate with them. And I what I did, Mary, was I called on the overlighting diva of bald-faced hornets and if there was an overlighting and diva of the hive. Okay. And I explained, and the way I did this is I just imagine it in my mind, you know, visualize it and speak it. And it seems to work for me anyway. Mm-hmm. So I explained all of this, that, you know, Uncle Doug was coming and, you know, that I love them. Well, originally when I found them, I mean, the first thing I did was say, hey, you guys, you know, I'm the first, I really respect what you do and I know you're important, but because of where you are, you need to leave. And what I got right away was, sorry, you know, we already built our house, the kids are here, we can't leave. So, you know, it was like all is well and good, but we ain't leaving. Okay, home is already built.
Too late.
You know, if you cut us before we did all, you know, maybe, but, you know, family's already here. So, anyway, so I explained why they couldn't stay, that Doug would be coming, and Mary, I was so pleased because I had just finished reading your book, and we'll get into this, but I told them, I said, you know, you will have to give your bodies to humanity, and you will serve a higher purpose by becoming anti-wasp venom. And I said, after all, like Granny, the orca says, it's only one lifetime, you know, and whether you volunteer or not, this is what's happening, but it's only one lifetime. So I swiped a line from your book, and I said, so this is what I need you to do. I mean, you can get up in the morning, but I'm going to let you know. I said it's really important tomorrow morning that, you know, you stick close to the hive, and I'd like everybody to stay home, and kind of like nighttime, and everybody be there, and if you're leaving, stay very close, because Doug will call me when he's on his way. I will let you know he's coming, and then I need everybody to come back to the hive, and you need to be close and stay here if you want to go with your family, and everybody goes together. But if you go fly off and do what you usually do, you know, then I explained that he would take who he could, and then the ones would be left, and I explained to him how they would just have to lay there and starve and all of that, and if they didn't want to have, then they had to hang around and be here for the collection so they could all go together. So I did that the night before he came. And then when he called me, he was on his way. I spoke to them again, said he's coming. And then when he got there, told me about the process, and because he's done the show and he knows who I am, and anymore, I don't care if people think I'm nuts or not. So I said, well, you know, I talked to him, you know, and I have a plan, and I'm hopeful that we can get them all. And he said, yeah, right. And, you know, he said, but it was fascinating to watch him, you know, put on his gear and get the vacuum and get up there and everything. And so I'm watching because I could be right inside my front door and see everything that's going on. And so I was watching, and the whole time I'm communicating, now come to the silver tube, get in the silver tube, you know, come back, get in the silver tube. And it was quite amazing. I guess people that do this kind of work, they develop an energy about, I mean, they know how to do it. Mm-hmm. He is so calm. I was kind of blown away by Doug's energy. He's just absolutely relaxed and totally calm, and the hive never got upset, and like they didn't come flying out and try to attack him. I mean, a few times one or two would fly around him, but none ever landed on him. They mostly got just around the tube.
Wow.
I was amazed at his gift for being so calm.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he probably exudes pheromones or something when he's doing this, but he just has such a wonderful demeanor. But so he's sucking up, you know, sucking him up, and so he does that for quite a while, and the whole process probably took a couple of hours, maybe an hour and a half, but he shut it down, and then what he does is, he tips he uses the hose and the silver tube and kind of leans it up against the hive. So the silver tube of the vacuum is leaning right next to the door. And he says he thinks that kind of helps them stay around because they feel like threatened. And so instead of flying off to hunt, they stay close to deal with the silver tube. And then what he does is take the canister. And one of the reasons it takes so long is he takes the canister, which he pulled it out of the vacuum. And it's like, I've never seen so many hornets in my life. And I got to see them way up close, you know. And they really, I didn't realize the bald-faced hornets, I mean, they're big. They look just like big, huge yellow jackets.
Mm.
Only they're black with white stripes. And then they have a white spot on their head. So he puts them in a cooler, you know, with dry ice to cool them down. And I just realized I'm looking at the clock and we need to stay on time. So we're going to take a little time out here to take care of our advertisers and sponsors, which, of course, is the most important part of the show, because without them, there's no us. So please pay attention to that and support them if you can. When we continue, I will tell you the end of the wasp story. I'm so excited because it's really a good end of the story. And then we'll be talking with Mary and the whales. So stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Is your website representing your business the way you want it to? Is it using the best the internet has to offer? If your answer is no to either of these questions, then pay close attention. Academy of Spirit is offering a special sale on their website review package. They will help your business grow by bringing out the true spirit of your business through your website. Get video working for you right away. This $150 video special includes their staff reviewing your site and suggesting where and how video and other website upgrades may increase your search engine exposure. Then they will record and edit up to 3 short videos for your website. Bring the spirit of your business to life through your website and do it today. Only a limited number of opportunities are available. Academy of Spirit, your multimedia services resource. Go to academyofspirit.com/special or call today, 425-398-8011. That's 425-398-8011. Massage is good for everyone, including your pets. Learn animal massage close to home at the Northwest School of Animal Massage. Teaching pet owners and horse owners since 2001, the Northwest School of Animal Massage offers flexible online and hands-on classes, including Fundamentals of Animal Massage with Lola Michelin on August 1st. Now's the time to enroll in the Distant Learning Program to prepare for fall classes. For more information, go to nwsam.com or call 877-836-3703. Locally, call 425-222-3703. That's 425-222-3703.
Urine contamination is a common and stubborn problem. Conventional cleaning methods are not the answer. Anti-Icky Poo works quickly and naturally, and it's my all-time absolute favorite odor neutralizer. This unique bacteria enzyme solution converts the waste directly into carbon dioxide, a safe and odorless gas found in everyday clean air. Ask your vet for Anti-Icky Poo or call 1-800-745-1677. Anti-Icky Poo, it's a serious product with a funny name that really works, especially on cat urine. 1-800-745-1671.
Radio with no added hormones or preservatives. All natural. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hey y'all, Martha Norwalk, and we're on the downside of the first hour of this week's edition of Animal World, but you can find us here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Mary Gettin's in the studio with me. She's the author of Communicating with Orcas, The Whale's Perspective. I can't wait to get into her story and all of this, but I'm going to finish my wasp story because I'm just so excited. So I left you, Doug is in the middle of collecting the bald-faced hornets from the hive in front of my house. And he done round one. He puts them in a cooler with dry ice to cool them down. And then I was amazed because I got to go out there with him. And when he opened up the canister and shook them all out, and he puts them into little Ziploc baggies and then eventually takes him to the lab that makes the anti-venom. But he was just pleased because he told me that they were not getting, that the lab would take as many bald-faced hornets as they could get because they were very low on that particular anti-venom, and they were not getting many of them this year. And at any rate, so then he goes back for round two, sets it up again, and sucks as many. And of course, while he's doing that, I'm calling him in. I'm saying, come home, come back to the hive, get in the tube. And so he does round two when he thinks he's, you know, pretty much not a lot of activity. And then he pulls the hive. And he actually, you know, cuts it out of the bush, and then he takes it apart. And so I got to see the hole, and he found, got the queen out, And the queen, and I said, because I'd asked him about it, the queen doesn't defend. So she, if there's a problem, she doesn't come out to try to get, you know, she just stays in. So he got the queen, and then the inside of the hive, the paper layers are for insulation to keep it warm or cold. And in this case, it was on the west side of my house, so it got a lot of direct sun. So that's why they put so many layers on, is to keep it insulated. And then some of the worker wasps stay in there and fan, you know, the kids, the larvae. And then the larvae are in, you know, those little segmented compartments in like a big pancake. And it was amazing because I got to see them and the different stages of developments, wow, the newly laid and the ones that were just coming to life. And it was really quite, you know, the wow, scientist part of me. I know, Mary, you have a scientist part of you. And so I was really fascinated by all of that. So then he, so as he's in the process, you know, he starts out saying, well, you know, there could be up to, you know, a couple hundred or so left that I'll have to come back for, you know, but they really aren't a danger and they'll just hang there and die. I said, no, that's not happening. And then it's getting more and more and time's going on. And then he's saying, well, maybe there'd be 50 to 100 left, sort of thing. And then by the time he gets, you know, he finishes up the process and he's starting to collect his equipment. And then another hornet comes in and I made him come back and, you know, the wait for me, or, you know, suck that one up. And then off he went. With the hornets, and the wonderful news to the end of the story. Oh, because when he finally left me, he said, you know, I got an awful lot, and he said, so probably there's only going to be like 10 to 15 left behind.
Wow,
which is pretty good.
That's really good.
Okay, and so off he went, and I'm so over the moon delighted about this. Not one hornet was left behind. Not one.
Wow.
We got every single one. Because, you know, he said, you know, I can't come at night when they're all home, you know, because I'm out. It just doesn't work. I have to do it during the day, and therefore we can't get everybody. But, you see, when you know how, that you can make such a difference when you know how to communicate.
Right. And you approach them with that respect and love.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's the key.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't anger them. Or nope. Judge them away. Get yourself in big trouble that way. But if you find, like, see, I had to find something about them besides the fact that they eat insects, which is great. You eat probably insects, and that's great. But I'd find something that I could really focus on to bond with them over. And what I realized is what great little builders they are. Mm-hmm. And what amazing how they chew this, whatever they chew up, and they make the paper and stuff, and what incredible craftsmen and architects they were. So I really got into talking to them about how great they were with that. And, you know, we never had an issue for as long as they were there and as close as they were to the door and all the activity there. They never once got upset with anybody or hassled anybody. They were quite congenial. Which is pretty good for bald-faced hornets. And, you know, every single one of them was collected. Not one was left behind. So, and it was only one lifetime.
Oh, that's right.
We'll tell you about that. Now, if you are thinking, I need Doug's phone number because I want my wasps to serve a higher purpose, he will not take the little wasps that do the little open cones. There's not enough of those. He doesn't do those. But any paper wasp that builds those paper hives, that he will take those, and they will use those for the anti-venom. So here is the contact information. It's Doug Cheney, and his phone number is 425-485-0103. 425-485-0103. And so you can call him, and he will come and collect your paper. And it doesn't cost you anything. So he makes his money by selling the wasps to the lab for the anti-venom.
What an interesting profession.
Yeah, yeah. But you'd be amazed. If you get to see him work in person, the calm this man has is absolutely unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It was really quite impressive. And Sandy looked up if you need to spray kill the hives, there, if you go to the regular hardware store and stuff, or on the shelves, most places, you're going to get the really toxic poison. But one product is made by Safer, S-A-F-E-R, and it's called Poison Free Wasp and Hornet Killer. Sandy says this is pretty relatively available, and like Home Depot and stuff like that would have it. This other one's by EcoSmart, and it's EcoSmart Wasp and Hornet, and that is not as easy to find. But those are that's the information there, and I'll call Doug and give him that so that he'll be able to pass it along to his people, you know, the people that call him. But once again, it's Doug Cheney. If you want your hornets and wasps to serve a higher purpose, and I'm thinking one of these, I'm going to talk to Doug and see, because he could easily do this communication himself. Well, because anybody can do this. You just need to know how. Now, to do what Mary does and get the information back, it takes a little more skill. I mean, anybody can do that too. But you most humans have to learn how to do that. But that's what Mary teaches, and we'll talk about that too. But anybody can easily communicate to any living thing. And you just need to know how.
Absolutely.
It's not hard. I mean, if I can do it, anybody can do it. Not one hornet. Isn't that cool?
Not one left behind. That's great.
They all went with their family. They all went together. Not one. And that was amazing. When he got there and I went out on the porch and he was coming up to see where the hive was, it was like, I was going, Doug, this is really strange, because usually it's really, really active that time in the morning. I mean, you know, they're in and out and in and out. There's a traffic jam at the front door. They're all over the place. And it was very calm. There was hardly anybody going in and out. And I kind of looked at it, and even I'm amazed. You know, it's like, wow, they really are staying home. There's not much happening. And when that last one came back saying, wait for me! That was just too fun.
Great.
All right, let's, we've got one more time. We need to take care of advertisers and sponsors. We will do that. And then we will get into communicating with orcas. And Mary Gettin, stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Wagon Tails Liver Cookies, healthy, handmade treats for your dog that offer a heart full of love in every bite. Wagon Tails Liver Cookies are made with only the highest quality human certified ingredients that come from a local meat market and restaurant supply companies. They never use byproducts, wheat, corn, soy, or products with hormones or antibiotics. And dogs absolutely love them. Go to WagonTailsCookies.com to order this fabulous treat and read the heartwarming story about Willow, the inspiration for Wagon Tails Cookies.
Canada Pet Foods is committed to providing you and your pets the highest quality, all-natural, human-grade holistic products using the finest natural ingredients available, including vitamins and chelated minerals. Canada products are made the Canada way, with superior quality in every bag and can. 100% satisfaction guaranteed and 100% nutritionally guaranteed. Check out the new All Life Stages grain-free formula. 80% meat protein, 20% vegetables and fruit, and zero grains. Discover why dogs love Canada. Go to Canada.com for more information.
This is Martha Norwalk, host of Animal World, and I'd like to talk to you about Robin Alexis. Although I liked Robin right away, I was skeptical at first. But let me tell you, that was unwarranted, and now I believe that Robin is the real deal. Often referred to as the metaphysical mother, Robin's a spiritual empowerment coach with incredible gifts. Robin's a medium, ghost and baby whisperer, medical intuitive, past life reader, animal communicator, and channel. In addition to being a radio and TV personality and author, she's also a Reiki master teacher. Simply put, Robin is amazing. I know, because she's been helping me incredibly on many levels. Robin is nurturing, powerful, and did I say phenomenally gifted? Robin can help you too. Her books and personal one-on-one phone readings can change your life forever. Let Robin help you heal and release those blockages so you can experience life more fully. To schedule a reading, go to robinalexis.com, and while you're there, download a free copy of the first two chapters of her new book. That's robinalexis.com, or give her a call at 360-457-2993. That's 360-457-2993.
News, traffic, and weather? Now you can get your information fixed weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hey, y'all, Martha Norwalk, and I want to say thank you for spending your Sunday morning with us here on Animal World. Hope you'll do it every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. My guest, and I'm so pleased to say, you know, some things defy logic. And I have to say, that I have no excuse, really, but because I've been doing this show. We were talking about that before the show, but for at least 15 years, and Sandy's been with me almost that long. And I was thinking about this morning driving over here. It's like, I've known Mary for, I don't know how many years I've known you, but it's been a long time. And why you've never been on the show before, that's what kind of defies logic. I'm not really sure why that's never happened, except that maybe that you know, you were over on the islands and so far away and all that sort of stuff. But I also trust in the divine right timing of things and all of that. And all I can say is that it's time, because she's here, and I'm just so delighted.
Finally.
Mary Gettin, her book is Communicating with Orcas, the Whale's Perspective. She's a very gifted animal communicator and doing some incredible work, and we're going to talk about everything that she's doing. But before we get into the book and what the whales have to say, because I've been having a gal on the show, Liz Mitten Ryan, who is doing incredible work with warm-blooded horses out of the interior of British Columbia, and the horses are communicating with her, and the spiritual information that they're bringing through is just blow your mind, profoundly simple and beautiful, and I've been being told that in the evolutionary process and ascension process that we humans are going through on the planet, and the raising of the vibration of the planet and all of that, that the animals are going to be playing a much bigger role than we realize, and how important that they're going to be. And the first really smack of that came from these horses, because the second book in her four-book series is The Truth According to Horses, and it was written by horses. And then when you came across my radar again recently, and I'm reading your book, the same kind of profoundly spiritual information is coming from the whales. So it was like, this is just so in line with what we're doing. So anyway, I just think that it's time.
It is.
But my apologies for not having you sooner, but I guess we just had to save the best for later. And so you're here now, and I'm very pleased. So let's talk a little bit about, though, you have not been an animal communicator all your life. Right.
No.
You weren't one of those that popped out of the womb knowing all of this. So tell us, how did you evolve?
You know, I didn't even know about animal communication, and it was back in the 80s, and I was working at the California Marine Mammal Center.
You've always been into animals. And
I've always loved animals, always wanted to work with animals.
Okay.
And at the time I was working there, it was a hospital for seals and sea lions. And, you know, in that kind of situation, you've got animals on the beach. You don't know where it hurts. You don't know how long it's been since they've eaten. There's just no information except they're sick. And it was in 1988, I met Penelope Smith.
She was
at an event, and she was talking
to dogs. She, of course,
is
an animal communicator, and she teaches, and she was one of the ones that I
met originally on as well. Yeah. Right. Okay. And so she told me about animal communication and that she was teaching a workshop, and so I just immediately went and took her class, because I thought, if I could learn how to talk to these seals and sea lions, I would be a tremendous asset to this hospital. But 88 was a long time ago in the world of telepathy, and so...
Now, was this before you were doing the whale-watching tours?
This was in California.
This is in California, and this is long before that kind of work has started for you. But I got the impression from reading your book that you were pretty scientifically oriented early on.
Yeah, I would say so. I would more categorize myself a naturalist.
Yeah, naturalist.
Right.
Yeah.
And during those years at the Mammal Center, when we're working with seals and sea lions, we also cared for any stranded cetaceans, dolphins, porpoises, whales that ended up in that San Francisco area.
But obviously you were open to this kind of communication. When you heard about Penelope, it would be really helpful to know what's going on with these marine mammals that you're dealing
with.
Absolutely.
Okay. I was just excited to learn how to do this. So that's how it started for me. It was in 1988 I took my first class in animal communication.
And developed the skills from there.
Right. In the 80s, people weren't so open to it. You know, when I would go up to the director of animal care and say, this elephant seal has a stomach ache, they would kind of back off and roll their eyes and run the other way.
Yeah.
So I actually put it away for a few years.
Yeah, my first encounter was with Beatrice Lydecker.
Right.
when she started coming to town and doing stuff. And I have to chuckle about it now because I'd go and listen to her speak and do what she's doing. And my first impression was, well, so what's so special about that? I mean, you know, I can, you know, I've done everybody talk to animals, you know, yeah. It's like, and I could make up the same thing she's making up. I mean, I didn't realize that I'd really been communicating with animals all my life, but, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So it took me, but that, and then I don't know if it was Samantha
Curry.
Or I think Penelope Smith may have been next, and then Samantha Curry. But all of those, connecting with all of those. So it was exactly at that time. But, yeah, nobody was, there wasn't, it wasn't mainstream for sure.
No.
And wasn't readily accepted. And so you didn't always tell people what you were up to and what was going on.
Oh, it took me a long time, really, to start talking about it openly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because my early experiences were people were kind of afraid, they would back off, they would roll their eyes, they would think I was really, really nuts. But things have changed so much now. I mean, it's so widely accepted.
Well, and obviously you learned to develop the skill and have continued to work with that so that it has become your livelihood,
it
isn't
is.
It?
Yeah, I opened my professional practice in 1996. So I've been working professionally now
for a
long
time.
When
did you come up here and start?
I moved up to Orcas Island in 1990. And I came up here specifically to work with orcas.
Oh, okay.
You know, I wanted to get somewhere where I could work with whales, and I discovered the San Juan Islands on a tour driving around trying to find a new place to live.
Yeah.
And it was fabulous. I managed, you know, I lived in the islands for 18 years, and I was a coordinator of the Marine Mammal Stranding Network for 10 years. I worked at Wolf Hollow Wildlife Rehab Center up there.
Okay.
I led whale and wildlife cruises for 10 years in the islands. I was a member of Islands Oil Spill Association.
Wow.
So I worked with any spills that we had in Washington. So when I moved up to Orcas, my whole life was animals.
Okay. And then one of your jobs was doing these whale watching tours.
Correct.
You would go on the boat. You'd be the, what
I
would
was
be
the naturalist.
So you're the naturalist on the boat. So you're the lady with the microphone.
Right.
And you go out there looking for whales, and you're educating people about.
Right. Interpreting behaviors, explaining what's going on, talking about their natural history. And it was what, during that time, I really started to focus on Granny and J-Pod, which is one of the local families of orcas here. And I just liked them.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen Granny early on and been able to identify her. And they were just an interesting group because there were actually four generations traveling together.
Yeah, and there are families of orcas and that travel around our area, and there's what, J, L, and K pods, JK and L pods,
right.
and then perhaps we'll have time to go through their hierarchies of family and what that's all about. But you were most interested in working with the orcas.
Right. Yeah, they were just fascinating creatures.
And back then, I don't think you were going out on these whale tours, though, and talking to whales on those tours with the and stuff.
No.
You were being the naturalist.
I was being the naturalist. And I did that from 1991 through the year of 2000, through the 2000 season.
Okay.
And I started interviewing the whales, though, like in 96.
Okay, that's when you decided you wanted to know what they had to say.
Right.
And then you hooked up with another communicator.
Right, Rafaela Pope.
And she now lives up in this area, too.
Yeah, she's up in Carnation.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have to get her in here with you
sure.
next time or something.
That
have the two of
great.
You come in. That would be really great. And so the two of you decided to just do a project together. Now at the time she didn't live up here. She was in
Berkeley.
California.
yeah, she had come up to visit, and I had been talking to the whales, and there was some information I was getting that I didn't really trust that I was getting correctly, and so I gave her a list of questions to ask the whales, and after she got a chance to talk to Granny, she was so smitten with her, and I said, this would be a project we could do together.
All right. So we are going to close out this first hour of Animal World. We will run Summer Tip and keep